now for our last session. Michael's going to come up here and he's going to teach us how to increase Sunday attendance. So guys, you can start making your move to the front row because this is important stuff. And so let's welcome Michael as he comes and leads us in our last session.
Thank you, David. That is pretty sorry. That's a golf clap, you know, either do it or don't do it. So that's one step away from boo, you know? No, I'm not asking for that, but come on, you know what I'm talking about. So listen, Elliot just made a presentation. I realize that small groups can be intimidating, and there's a lot of organization to make it work. There's a lot of planning. You heard him talk about that. Can I just say a couple of things about the campaign thing? We did not create that. It was actually a guy named Brett Eastman who helped Bill Hybel start small groups, and he helped Rick Warren start small groups, and we brought him in, and he helped us learn about how to do these campaigns, and we want to make these available to you. And if it feels weird having a book that was written by somebody else, or videos where somebody else is on them, people do this all the time all across the country. They make them, and then people come along and say, can I use your series? And they do. And so you may have one with some other pastor who's, it could be Craig Rochelle, it could be, you know, any number of people that are on the video, and you just use it. It's just like using a curriculum in a Sunday school. So it's available, and if you'd like to, you can use them. We can make them available to you. You can have the sermon notes, all the stuff, and you plan it, and it's amazing. It really is amazing in terms of mobilizing people. I hope you really caught what Elliot was saying about making it easy for someone to host, and then what happens is you've had people, most of whom have had a positive experience hosting, and the next easy step is to say, all you have to do is walk through Leader Step with me, and I'll teach you how to do this, and you can do this again. So it's a great way to get people involved, and it's a great way to reach out to other people. And, you know, I just want to say I'm mad at Alan because he stole about half my stuff. But one of the things that he said about putting it in the message, so last Thursday night, which is just the other night, we're in the campaign, and it's called Building Successful Relationships. And so I greeted the people, you know, all of our sites on the video. Hey, everybody. And so I just want to say I met with my group this week. We had a lot of fun. And I told them right from the start, my group, I did it the easy way. So I said, and this is the kind of thing that you tell people. All I did was I went to four guys in the church who I knew who were businessmen and said, how'd you like to be in my small group? Oh, I'd love to. Okay, you can. The price of attendance is one person who's not a member. You got to bring one person who's not a member. We'll meet at Hilltop House. We'll meet on Thursday at lunch. Everyone's going to eat lunch. I'm going to eat lunch. It's the easiest way to lead a group. So we show up. They have the DVD. They can watch it, or they can go online on Monday and watch the sermon. And then they go through the little workbook. They read the little chapter. We come to Hilltop House. We eat the buffet. We have a private room. And there's my small group. And I got four guys from our church and four guys not from our church. It's the easiest thing. I said, if you guys are going to just do it. You could do it at a coffee shop. You could do it after church. You could do it before church. You could do it at the gym. Hey, let's meet at the gym. We'll do our workout. Afterwards, we'll go into the whatever little coffee thing they have there and sit there and have your little group. I mean, gosh, that's the way life works today. You go to Starbucks, people are sitting in a little circle. Am I right? So these campaigns are a great way to increase enthusiasm and excitement. You don't have to have 1,000 people to do it. The other thing I want to mention before I go into this is the college. You know, you've heard a lot about the college, but I just found out yesterday that, you know, the college is accredited. It's accredited by ABHE, the same accrediting society that accreditates. I wasn't homeschooled. I went to public school, so I don't know. It accredits the same accrediting society that accredits Moody accredits our school, and our master's degree in leadership is now available completely 100% as an accredited degree online. So we've had it as an accredited degree, but you had to go to some classes. So if you live wherever it is you live and you want a great degree in leadership, it really is a great degree. It is a lot of work, but it's a really great degree. So I just want to encourage you about that. You know, this topic, how to increase church attendance. For many years as a pastor, I did not know you could even talk about that. I didn't know that was possible. And I'll tell you where I first figured it out. And some of you have heard me talk about this before, but for those of you who haven't, and I think it's worth repeating. So my kids played soccer. My boys played soccer all the way through. And so we met people in relationship to the soccer thing, people who were like us or kids were like us. And so I met a guy that owned a transmission shop. And we got to be close because his kid was the same age as our kid. And in fact, we got close enough where we did some vacations together. They moved into our neighborhood. So it was kind of a cool thing. And one day, we went out to eat after or in between the soccer matches. Back in those days, it was kind of cool because you traveled to a city and they let you have two matches instead of traveling to Greensboro or Wilmington just playing once. So usually in between, you eat. So we were at a Chinese restaurant and we ate in between. And I was going up to pay and he was going up to pay. And he reached over and grabbed my bill. And I said, no, man, you don't need to do that because I don't want to be the pastor that everybody, you know, that I need a pastor discount. Is there anything free? I mean, I don't want to be that guy. So he grabbed it. I said, no, I got it, man. I tried to take it. He said, no, I got you. I said, no, you don't have to do that. Besides, I don't have to treat him later. So I'm just kidding. So only partially. So anyway, so he held on to it. He wouldn't give it back. And I said, dude, I can carry my own weight. And he said, yeah, but you don't know how much money I made last year. So I said, no, I don't. So what'd you make last year? He said, a little over $325,000. I said, wow, your transmission shop made $325,000? He said, no, I made $325,000. And he had me right there. Wait a minute. There aren't that many bad transmissions. So wait. How did you do that with a transmission shop? Because, you know, you drive through Fayetteville. You know, military people do several things. They, as soon as they get here, they buy a car. It's a junk car. Second thing they do is go out to eat. Third thing they do is watch a movie. The next thing they do is show up late to PT, and then they're in trouble. But anyway, how did you do that? He said, he didn't really want to tell me. He said, I hired the best mechanics, and I paid them the best money. He thought that would suffice as an answer. It's a true answer. But I said, whoa. No, Jones, I ain't buying that. Nobody in this town says you pay the mechanics the best and you hire the best ones. They don't know that. Only you and they know that. So that's not the real answer. How did you make $325,000 with one transmission shop? Tell me how you did that. And he kind of laughed a little bit. He said, lead count. So, okay. Tell me more. Lead count. What the heck does that even mean? He said, I challenge you. Go get the phone book, open to the yellow pages, and this is back when that was how people got stuff. Look in the yellow pages and look to see what's on every single time that says transmission at the top on every page. He said, I spent $12,000 a month on yellow pages and advertising. Then I thought, there's no way, you're lying to me. There's no way you spend that much on advertising for your transmission shop and still make $325,000. He said, listen, I'm a salesman. I don't repair transmissions. I sell transmission repairs. And I know I'm only so good a salesman. So if I can sell 2/3 of the people that walk through the door, then the only thing I have to change to raise the number of people I have whose services I'm giving, you know, whose transmissions I'm selling, the only thing I have to change is the number of people that walk through the door. That's what he meant by lead count. He said, I know I'm a good salesman, and I know I can get a little bit better, but I can't get a lot better. That's who I am. So I get more people through the door, and the more people through the door, the more I'm going to sell the same percentage, and the more people are going to get their transmission repaired here at Mr. Transmission, and that's going to cause me to make about $325,000, and next year I'm going to make more because I'm opening another one. So I started thinking, lead count. You know, I wonder how many people stay when they... So I started doing a little bit of research, and I found out if you can keep 10% of the people that walk through your door, then you should write a book. If you can consistently keep 10% of the people who walk through your door, you should write a book. And the more I looked at that, the more I began to play with those numbers, and I realized that most people don't have enough. They have goals, and they're praying and fasting and crying out to God, which is a good thing to do. I believe in that for the goals. They set the goals. That's good. They prayed for the goals. That's good. They pray over the goals. That's good. But then when you do the math, they don't have enough people coming through the door to meet the goal. I mean, you'd have to be the best on the planet. The stuff that Alan talked about, you'd have to be the best at that. You can keep about 23%. The numbers are, you can keep about 23% the best. You can keep about 24% of the people who come 2 weeks in a row. But you can keep about 63%. The best people keep about 63% of the people who come three times in a row. So then it hit me, okay, it's not just lead count, but it's lead count plus comeback. You got to get them coming back. So the key is I got to get more people through the door. So you do the math. If you have 10 guests, if you have 10 human beings come every single week that are new, how many can you keep? Y'all were also public school. Is there a homeschooler here? Thank you. So if you have 10 people come through the door and you're doing the best job you can do, you can keep one a week, which means how many in a year? 52. 52 in a year. And you say, you know, we're about 90 people, but we believe God wants to take us to 500. Now, if you're going to keep 52 people a year and you're 82, how many years is it going to take you to get to 500? Forever. Forever, right? 8 years. 8 years. Let's talk about how to increase our lead count. I got some ideas here. And two of the first two I've stolen from Vander Blumen. And Alan stole number two from me. So that shortens my talk. First thing he said, Vander Blumen. You know who Vander Blumen Research Group and all that. You know who they are, right? They're the number one placement group about placing people in local churches. And he's just a really great guy. I've done some mentoring with him and Leadership Network and gotten to know him pretty well. He's a really, really, really sharp fella. The number one thing he says is revamp your website. And I want to tell you that you can't play with it. It can't go down. It can't be broken. It can't not work. Because in the old days, your stained glass window was, oh, that was a beautiful stained glass window. It's a beautiful lawn. That's a beautiful building. It's got a beautiful steeple. Your website is your stained glass window. It's where people go and they look at it. And the studies, and I didn't bother giving you all the numbers, but the studies on how long people stay on a website, it's shocking. They click because you can click so quickly. You know, before you had to drive to it. So you drive to it and stop your car and take a look to see, do we want to go to church there? Because you had to put some effort into it. But now you've just got a few minutes to wait at a doctor's office. You've got a long time to wait at a doctor's office before your appointment. And so you get out your phone and you're going to check to see if what that local church is all about. You heard about them. So you're going to go and look at the website. When you click on it, if it's a crappy, cruddy front, you're done with it. That's it. You're never going to go. It's period. It's over. It's the stained glass window. Number two, it's the open door. It's how people can walk. So it's like do an open house. You walk into the house and you look at the closets, you look at the appliances, you look at the countertop, you look at the flooring, you look at all the stuff. And then you go back in the car and say, do we want to talk to a realtor about that? Because I kind of liked what I saw there. It opens, you step, that's what an open house is all about, to increase interest and to see if you can create traffic so that somebody will buy the house you're trying to sell. Well, the website allows people to stalk you. So they're going to go and watch a little bit of your sermon. And that means, you know, you heard what Alan said about excellence. It needs to be done right. It can't just be thrown up there. It can't just be put together. Because they're going to go through and see if all your buttons work. You ought to check to make sure your buttons work. That when it clicks on, that irritates me. And I'm done with it. Anybody know what I'm talking about? You click on men's ministry and it goes to this page is not yet whatever. Or you click on men's ministry and it goes back to the beginning. And you think, if they're this lax in this, then they're this lax in everything. So the website's important. It's your open door. It's your church bell. And used to be in a small town America, the bell starts to ring. That means church is going to begin. So all the information about what's going to happen, when and where, is available to them right there. Right there on that website. And then it's your church marquee. I mean, it used to be people drive by and they see what's on the front. You got your slogan. And in that slogan, you try to... Y'all don't do slogans, do you? If you do Ed Stetzer, you're going to do something stupid, or you're going to delegate it. Someone's going to do something stupid. You're going to go to Ed Stetzer's website, and you're going to find your church on his slogan thing. Don't do that. But it used to be where you wanted to try and say, this is what our message is. So you put up the little numbers, you know, the little letters, and we're preaching on this Sunday, or whatever the case may be. But it's your marquee. You can say, what's the current series? What's it about? You've got space to give your vision and all the stuff that you want people to understand about you. And the truth is, it needs to be really, 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 and I don't know, he didn't put this on you, but I'll put this on you. It needs to be really, really simple. The number one thing I think I have seen, and from what I hear from our guys and our staff that deal with this, the number one thing I think they have seen is too many words. Don't say everything you know. It ought to be able to be seen, absorbed, click, see, absorb, click, listen to you. You're doing a great job. It's a great message. They're caught a little bit because you've done a good job on your video or whatever it is that you've done. Or if you can't do that, you go out and hire somebody to video you professionally, a professional person, spend the money greeting the people who've come to your website and telling them you ought to come to church and listen to our podcast. If you don't have video, you can at least get that on there. So there's a human being and you can compete at that level. Number two, he said, focus on first. Can I just tell you, if you're looking for a magic pill, you won't find it here. I mean, I'm not going to say this is the thing that works. Go give away a bicycle to the kid that brings the most people to Sunday school. That's been done before, back in the old fundamental Baptist days. These are things that if you consistently do, will increase your attendance. So number two, focused on first impressions. Put the people on the team who make the best first impression. So I'm not going to say any more about that because Alan said that. But I think it's really important. We need to really focus on that. Number three, update the signage. There's nothing more infuriating than going to a place and not knowing where to go. So I was recently in Texas, and I was doing some dove hunting with a friend, and I just wanted to experience the flow of his service. He said, would you do me a favor, and would you be like the secret shopper? Which I didn't really want to, because I didn't want to put my mind on what are you doing right and wrong. I just wanted to experience it so I could come home and make ours better. But to be a good friend, I did. So the first thing I noticed when I pulled up, I hated to tell him this. He's got brand new signage in his parking lot. They redid the parking lot, brand new signage. And I drove up and I said, I see that there are signs over there, but where do I go? Where am I supposed to park? It was legitimate because I didn't know where to go in. They had two entrances. I didn't know which one was for me. I didn't know which one is where I would find my friend to say hi to him. So I drove up, drove through the parking lot a little bit, and I realized we're not going the right direction. Now we're off in a section over here that isn't. So let me just pull back out of here. So I drove back out, back to where we were. In fact, Randy was with me. Didn't we actually? We actually had to drive back out on the road. And they had done a great job of getting the police to direct this lane of traffic into their. I mean, if you're driving down the road and it's four lanes, if you're on the inside lane, you're going to church. Brilliant. And then they had the way to go out, the other direction. And they had police out there for both. It was really good. So I pulled in and I said, this isn't the spot. So I had to drive back out, get on the road, drive against the traffic real quick and get inside. I hope nobody gets me. Instead, they do, I'm a pastor. They'll give me a pass. So it's Texas. They'll probably put me in jail and shoot me. But anyway, so we got in there. And when we got in there, I could say, okay, now there's some signs up there. But they were literally, it said visitor parking. First of all, visitor parking. You know what visitors do? They come and they leave. Guests come. That's different. Should say guest parking. It was this big. So what we drove. I said, I don't know where to park. I'm just going to park here. So the whole experience they wanted me to have with being greeted in the parking lot never happened, which is a bad idea because I'm the secret shopper. So I just parked and got out. I said, does that actually say? So we had to walk way over there. It's way over there and go, yep, it says visitor parking. We're supposed to go back there. I'm not going to get in my car and do that again. I'm not going to go hang around and go back all the way back over there. The signage just wasn't any good. So we walked into this really, we went to their main campus, their original campus, and we went to their $8 million multi-site campus that they built. I loved it. I loved the building. But I walked in the inside, and I legitimately had to use the bathroom. But I know that one of the things that makes people who come to your church worried is they won't know how to find a bathroom. They need to know where the bathroom is. It's one of the first things they think of. Where do I put my children? Is it going to be safe? Thank you, Alan, for stealing that from me. And where do I go to the bathroom if I need to? So I went in there and I walked in and there are people greeting. And I thought, I don't need to be greeted. I just had, you know, a 16-ounce coffee in between. And without being disrespectful, I need a bathroom. But I'm not going to ask them, you know, hey, I don't know you. Where's the bathroom? You don't want to do that. Oh, you got to go, huh? Yeah, well, that's not the first thing you want to say. So I walked in, and it was a small, it was a fairly small building. It holds 1,000 people, but they did a really great job the way they built it. I walked in, looked around. I got past the greeters, which at that moment wasn't good for me. You greeted me outside. Now you want to shake my hand and engage me. I need to pee. I'm just telling you honestly. So there's the coffee bar. That's nice. There's the children's ministry. I'm looking all around. Finally, I walk all the way through the building to the end, found the bathroom. So I told him, dude, you got to put a sign that sticks out. I know it says, it's a really cool sign too. You got your logo and your sign and all that, but it's against the wall. I have to actually be there to find it. You need to update your signage. Where do the kids go? Where's the bathroom? All that kind of stuff. That needs to be there. Number four, preach series. Why would you want to preach a series? Anybody got an idea why you want to preach a series? You're all wrong. Because it's easier on the pastor. You just have to choose like six or seven topics in a year, and then you can preach seven times on the same topic. Eventually, you'll get it right. They'll learn something. No, I'm kidding. It really is so people will come back. So you preach series. And there's continuity. So if they come to the first one, or even if they come to the second one, they think, I was interested in that. I want to come back and hear the next part. So talk about the next series during the series and the next message in the next message. So in this series, we were in the Hebrew series. Now, you had one of these on your seat, and I'll talk about that in just a second. This is our invitation. I'll talk about that. But in the Hebrew series, I intentionally jumped into something on relationships, and I said, so I'm teaching in the latter part of the Hebrew series, so we jumped into something on relationships, and I said, I have a lot to say about this. But listen to me. You can go back and watch it. I have a lot to say about this and not a lot of time to say it. Let me just say that, and I took one really great poignant point, like a hand grenade, like, what? Could you say more? And I intentionally threw it into the sermon. So wait a minute, you didn't expect them to understand? I expected them to understand the words that I said, but I also expected them to say, could you elaborate that a little bit? Because I want to hear that point more than I want to hear the last point you gave. Does that make sense? So I said, I don't have a lot of time to say it, but I do want to say this. And I said it, and I said, by the way, that's the topic of our next series entitled Building Successful Relationships. So you throw out that little thing. So in the message that you're in, talk about, not every time, but often enough, talk about the next message. By the way, that's the topic of our next message in this series. We're going to talk about this next week. So if you can just bump into it and mention it, then it increases people's appetite. Now, I didn't come up with that. Ed Young uses that. He's an expert at that. Mentioning the next series in this series and the next message in this message. There's always a creative way to find a way to slip that in. And then tell life-changing stories. I think if you put those kinds of things in your messages, and also, if you're not going to put it in your message, then you saw Elliot. He stole a little bit of my thunder, too. Show them on videos. And listen, your videos in that kind of way, today, you know the Blair Witch Project is back. Anybody know what that is? I know we're all Christians, so we're going to pretend we don't. But don't see it, but you know it's out there. The Blair Witch Project was a low-budget movie that made multiple millions of dollars. It really kind of almost created a new genre, not of film, but of filmmaking. So the idea in the Blair Witch Project, they had cameras and they ran through the woods. And it was really kind of frightful. People said, that kind of live action thing is kind of cool. So you'll notice that's in more and more videos. Even in our countdown, did you notice that it goes at the beginning of the countdown? It doesn't. It took so many hours to make it go because that's part of the whole new genre. So it's okay if it's done that way on purpose and intentionally. Now, if you're going to use a video camera and it looks crappy, you can say, well, that's kind of cool because people think, no, it's just crappy. But if you want to use the way people do stuff today, it's okay. I had to bring it up here, but it's okay to use your cell phone. It really is, but you have to let people know that's what you're doing. So you say, hey, I'm right here with such and such, and he's going to tell me about his experiences. So Bob, tell me how that was. And you turn it to him. He talks a little bit. You can play that, and people think that's cool because they watch those all the time. How many YouTube videos are that? Am I right? And they go viral. So it's okay to do that. And see, people think not that you're broke and don't have any cameras, but that you're cool and you did that on purpose. You're faking it till you make it. You're saving your money over here to get a camera, you know, somebody's used camera, whatever. But you're able to do that with a video. And you can do that. You can show that kind of stuff. And as long as it's intended that way. But if you rip a video off YouTube and show it like it's your video and it's all grainy, That doesn't work. Does that make sense? Tell stories. What are you trying to do? You're trying to create an atmosphere. Here's the bottom line. You're trying to create an atmosphere that people will bring people to. Number seven. This is shocking. Tell people you want them to bring people to church. And you go on to the next one. No, stop. Let me just ask you a question, Pastor. When's the last time you told people from the pulpit, I want you to bring people to church? Hey, listen, what I want everyone to do, I'm going to preach this sermon next week. I'm really excited about it. I've been working on it. And why don't you invite some friends? How about if everybody brings one person next week to church? And that's a good idea. You think that they know that, but they forget that. So let me tell you one of the things that we've started doing, and this will help you. So Easter is the Super Bowl for church. Am I right? We call it on our staff, this is the Super Bowl. Because my team is never in a Super Bowl, so I need a Super Bowl that I can root for, and Jesus is in that Super Bowl, and he always wins, so we call it the Super Bowl. So anyway, I'm a Redskin fan. No, I'm a Cowboy fan. I threw that out just to hurt the Redskins, so we're both hurt together. But at any rate, so one of the things we started doing is, in the last couple of years, and it really works, we're always in a series, but we have a standalone message before Easter. And the standalone message is always about the gospel or life change, and we've got stories in it, whatever the case may be. And it's during that we have invitations, which I'll talk about in just a moment. And it's during that sermon, I'm going to talk about how easy it is to invite people. Listen, this is a matter of life and death. No, it's not. It's graver than that. This is a matter of eternity. This is heaven and hell. This one little invitation. I mean, even now, I just thinking about the reality of that. This one little invitation, somebody's going to put an invitation in the hand of somebody. I mean, we had one Easter, we had 512 people respond to the gospel. At the end of it, when it was, I just want all of our people to catch this. And I said, I don't know who of you. I don't know which ones of you are the people, the 512. But somebody is the somebody who's responsible for the 512. So it may have been that one last invitation you passed out. It may have been the first one you gave. It may be the third invitation you gave to the same person. But on behalf of 512 people who are no longer going to burn in hell when they die, I thank you for passing out those invitations. So that was at the end of the Easter thing. But we have a message, and it's all about, wait, you're going to burn one whole Sunday? It's not burning. It's reminding people how easy this is, how important this is, how powerful it is to bring and to invite. And so we have a huge turnout at Easter. we've been using the Crown Coliseum, and I'll talk more about that in just a few moments, but it's better to do your own building, and I'll tell you why in just a few moments. So tell people, where am I? Number seven, tell people you want them to bring people to church. Occasionally say, listen, we're going to start a brand new series. In fact, that's another great thing about a series. A series gives you a chance. So you're going to have, if this were Manna Church, this is what would have happened. Except the greater series would be starting next Sunday. And you'd come in and they'd be on your seat. We use different strategies. We actually discuss this. We have people we pay money to do work. And part of their work is discussing this. In this particular series, is this the kind of series that we've discussed this months ago. Is this the kind of series that we mail this invitation? Do we want to mail? It's going to cost a little bit more, but what kind of series is this? Is this a series mostly for believers to build, like Alan's talking about, that you're aiming sometimes for people who are, like marriage or whatever the case may be. Is this that kind of series? Is this the kind of series that would appeal to people out there? Is this the kind of thing we want to mail the invitation? Okay, now if we mail the invitation, we're going to do the whole city. We're going to target zip codes. Are we trying to break into a new market? So we want to aim at a zip code that we don't have a lot of people coming from? By the way, you look at your data and you see our zip codes, our people are mostly this zip code, this zip code, that zip code. We don't have hardly any from this zip code. Why? Is it because there's an invisible barrier that people don't want to go from that town to this town? Or is it because we never targeted? And it may just be we don't have many people living there. So in order to reach those people, we've got to get people who live there in order to bring the people from there. So do we want to target a new place? Do we want to hit a zip code? No, no, no. Listen, this is a Super Bowl. We're not going to try anything we don't know doesn't work. So we're going to hit the places where we know people are coming from because it's working. We want those people to come. So we're going to mail it, or are we going to put on the seat? Are we going to pass them out when people leave? Is this one that we want to put in stacks and paperclip together so they get five or six? What do we want to do? Will you vary it so they can't get used to one little thing? But when they come in, if next week is when the greater series started, then whoever the host is going to say, when you came in today, you found an invitation on your seat. This is not for you. This is not just to put in your Bible. This is for you to invite a friend. So take this out, find a friend, invite them to church. Let's all stand up and it's time to receive an offering. Whatever the case may be, you're telling them what to do with it. Take this and give it to somebody else. So tell people you want to bring people to church. Number eight, use invitations to empower your people to invite people. So when you tell somebody, and I know this sounds simple, and I hope I'm not coming across like I'm speaking down to you with this, because some of these are so simple, but I think we miss these. Like for instance, this one, you go, yeah, I got that. Yeah, but here's what happens. We say, invite people to church. And they go, okay, Pastor, I'm going to do it. So they go to work and they say, it's Tuesday. And they remember, hey, Bob, I go to Manna Church and I'd like you to go to Manna Church with me. We got a marriage series and you were just sharing the other day at lunch how your marriage could need a little freshening up. And so here's a marriage series just for you. And usually an invitation doesn't fit that nicely, right? You're just inviting them to church. So he says, great, I'll come. What is it? Manna Church. Where is it? Cliffdale Road. What's the address? 5117. So then, Come Friday, he tells us why. We need to go to church. We're going to go to church where Frank goes. Where does Frank go? Something church. I don't know. Where does he go to church? Now, all you got to do is call Frank because you work with him. But what if you invited a waitress or a waiter? Or somebody you met at a football game, or somebody at a restaurant, or somebody you had a casual conversation with. They didn't know you personally. They can't call you. Where are they supposed to go? Was it Milford Church? It was your mama's church? It was some strange kind of name, something freaky, something little cult-like. No, I'm kidding. Or worse, Grace. Why is that worse? How many Graces are there? You got Grace Baptist, Grace Presbyterian, Grace Mennonite. You got Grace Covenant, you got Grace Life, you got Grace Wannabe Life, you got Grace Used to Be Life. Now we all go to the other Grace. What do you do with that? But if they have an invitation and you hand it to them, it's just literally right there. I realize they can go to the website, but they got to remember the name. So from here they can look up the website, whatever the case may be. Just take a look at this invitation, if you will, and I'm gonna give you something for free. This is a unique invitation. Most of our invitations are not like this. Most of our invitations are one sheet. It would be like the front and the back without the middle. Let me tell you why we did this, and I'm going to give you pastors a gift. I know most of you senior pastors feel like you can't take a significant vacation, but I'm glad most of you have your leaders here with you, because the greatest thing that you as leaders, as elders, the greatest thing you can give your church is a healthy senior pastor. Somebody say amen. Amen. I'm sad that the elders said, I don't know about that. I'm going to say amen. And so, you know, I hear guys say, yeah, for the first time in 5 years, I took a week vacation. Bad idea. You need to take a break. And by the way, they've done some research and they found that the optimal number of times that a senior pastor should speak in a congregation in order to be believed and heard and take all that, taken seriously and not overexposed, is 37. So what are you going to say? Well, I'm 48. Well, you'd be more effective, believe it or not, if you were 37 and raised up some other people to do the other weeks. Besides that, you need some breaks. You need to be able to go away for more than a week. Sometimes tell me the truth, you get away for a week and you're just beginning to feel like you can let your hair down and it's time to go back. And your attitude going back is not, yes, it's, am I right? Be honest. You need to take a little bit more extended time. So how am I going to do that? Because people are going to rebel against, they won't come if they find out I'm not preaching. Well, look what we did here. We actually advertised it. So we said, we have 11 speakers, 13 messages in the book of Hebrews. We told people that they're going to be, we didn't tell them when. So what I did, I took four, in fact, this was a sabbatical. I took 8 weeks. I missed the first 8 weeks of Hebrews. Did I preach the first week? I didn't even preach the first week. I didn't even start the series. Yeah, our attendance stayed strong. It's one of our strongest summers. It has been one of our strongest summers. We're in a very good fall. And most of these people, they did most of the preaching. I came in at week 9. So I came right at the tail end. I preached then and then started getting into the rotation. But most of it was already done. And they fashioned the sermons. They got together and worked on it. They fashioned the sermons. And nobody said, Michael's not here. Here's another idea. So there was one particular year when I had 4 weeks. I took 4 weeks off. And so I told the congregation, we've got a really great series coming up. It's on character studies. We're going to study Abraham and David or whatever, however else I did it. But I told the guys this. What I want you to do is I want you to choose a character you resonate with, and I want you to tell your life story. So you're going to get to know our pastors a little bit better, and they're going to use the life story of Moses or whoever it is to share their own life story. So there's no way I could be there preaching for those 4 weeks since it's not my life story, it's not their life story. You follow me? So it was okay when they got it. Oh, look, it's Christianic. He's and whoever else is on the other, because we have two speakers. It's Christianic. It's somebody else. They're telling their life story, and they're tying it in with the Bible, and it's kind of interesting. And next week it was somebody else, and no one said, Michael's not here. And I wasn't there for any of the four of them. So that's another great thing about these kinds of things that can actually help you with that. Number 9, add services or sites. Now, this only works for a growing congregation. So if you're stuck a little bit, don't think adding a service is going to help you. It will hurt you. Write this down. There's this thing called critical mass, and you've got to have critical mass in a service for it to work. If you don't, then all the cool stuff that Alan talked about won't work there. Critical mass. There have to be enough people in the room. We manipulate that. Yes, I use that term. We're not manipulating people. We're manipulating the room. We manipulate that with pipe and drape. So, for instance, if you come here on Sunday at 8:15 for the 8:15 service at Cliffdale, you'll walk in and there'll be pipe and drape. In other words, the room is smaller. We intentionally make it smaller to create critical mass so when the people come in the room, the worship experience and all that is vital and alive. Then it's immediately struck and taken down. At 9:30 service, there's no pipe and drape. 11 o'clock service, there's no pipe and drape. 12:30 service, there's pipe and drape to help create that kind of feeling. So you can't just add a service just to add a service. But when you start growing and you reach critical mass on a regular basis, you reach over 70%. When you start touching 80%, it's time to think about starting a new service. And I'm a firm believer in that. We put services here and there. And I'll tell you, if you've got, I wish we didn't have to have four on a Sunday morning. I wish we didn't, but we do. So we have to do 60 minutes. And that means we have to work twice as hard not to be 65 minutes. Do you follow me? But I'm a firm believer in the Thursday night service. I love the Thursday night service, and I recommend it to you. If you've got, you need to get at least two services on a Sunday before you do a Thursday. Three is even better. But after you do three services on a Sunday, may I recommend you go to Thursday night? Let me tell you why. Several reasons. If you're going to use video or you're going to record, that's a perfect time to do it because you can figure out how long the sermon is. In fact, if you want to know how long the sermon is so that on Sunday you don't go over and mess up your three, anybody know what I'm talking about? Any pastors guilty? No. Kendrick said no. Liar. You know what happens to liars? Especially in church. It's in the Bible. Acts chapter 5. Some people lied in church and they died. Don't lie in church. Moral of the story is lie outside. Lie before, lie after, but don't lie during. Okay. So what we do on Thursday, I or whoever is going to be recorded on Thursday, we go in at 4:45 and there's all the young communicators are in the room. This is for free. 4:45, the young communicators are in the room, and I, or whoever, usually me, preaches the sermon, and then we record it. And afterwards, the lights go up, and all the young communicators give me criticism, which, in a way, gives me a chance to mentor them back. I remember one time somebody said, well, it started slow, and it ended high. I said, yes, that's exactly the way I built it. Some messages, you want to start up here. If you want a crescendo at the end, if you start high, you have no place to go. So it's just all volume all the way through, and people have tuned you out halfway through. So it's a chance to instruct. But I listen to them. I get mentoring from them. So they say, that joke wasn't that funny. And I say, that's because you're an idiot. No. That joke wasn't that funny, or the illustrations be replaced, or I think that was redundant. And so we adjust it. Plus, I get an idea, how long is it? Then on Thursday night, we record it, and after the service, everybody that has anything to do with Sunday goes into a room. This is one of the best things we've ever done. They go into a room, we're all in there together, and we critique the Thursday night service. And it can be difficult. But it gives us a chance to fix it if it's broken. Plus, our tech people, if you record on Saturday, then your tech people, they're going to fix it. Many of whom are volunteers, have got to spend all Saturday night, not with their friends, but in a tech room, changing their stuff. You know what I'm talking about? So On Thursday night, you get a chance to sit around and talk about it. The transition was too long. It won't work. That video was too whatever. We need to change it. Or it wasn't funny. Or whatever the case may be. We get to tweak it, talk about it. All the people are going to communicate it. Every site. If you only have one site and three services, then that's fine. Bring those people in the room and talk about how it's going to go. So by the time Sunday happens, we've already done it. When you show up, it feels like they've already done this. That's because we did. Plus, we had 565 people on Thursday night. It's a real service. It's not just a capture service. It's a real service. Now, let me just tell you this, and I get these numbers confused. It's either 21% are people in Cumberland County and 26% are the people in America, or it's 26% are the people in Cumberland County and 21% are the people in America. I forget which number it is, but I'll just pretend that it's the latter. 26% of people in Cumberland County work on Sunday. 21% of the people in the nation work on Sunday. So from the get-go, when you get started, you only have Sunday. But once you get rolling, you're going to start needing to think, if you want to reach the whole community, you got to have some alternate times. So if you're shooting at only 74% of the people in your area, if you have an alternate service, Saturday is one of those. Thursday is one of those. I just recommend that once you get to start adding services, you add an alternate time, especially if you're in North Carolina and you're anywhere near the beach. Am I right? Because as soon as they're Friday, boom, they're gone, baby. You ain't seen them. You just hope they send their tithe check, tithe online. Put that on your website. But they can come to church. I see the beach people. I see them on Thursday. There's a couple that go to EP. There's a family that goes to EP. And then during the summer, they go to the beach every weekend. So on the summertime, they shift from EP to Thursday night. And they sit right about there. They get the message. They come ready. As soon as the service is over, because he's a surgeon, so he takes off Friday. Off they go. Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Come home Sunday night. And they're back at work. Add services or sites. Number 10, and I'm terrible at this, use social media, but we do a pretty good job of this. There have actually been times when we've experimented. Don't use invitations, use social media, and it actually does pretty well. Which means you need to get on Twitter, you need to get on Instagram, you need to get on Facebook and all those kinds of things. And let me just tell you, I'm not the best at this, but don't try to manage it in terms of what other people say about you. So if you have a Facebook page and someone gets on your Facebook page and reams you, leave it alone. Don't take it off. Don't drop it. Millennials will not believe you're honest if they can't find something a little bit negative or a little bit in the middle on your site. They got to be able to see that to know it's honest. And if you're smart and you leave it there, all your fans will kill that person for you. And what's good about that is, especially if they jump all down their throat. So what happens is someone comes on and says, this church is this or that or the other. And people jump on and say, listen, my life was changed there. Someone else jumps on and says, my marriage was restored in that place. When I came there, I was an alcoholic. But now, and you just kind of sit back and go, look what's happening here. In fact, sometimes I think we ought to go out there and write a fake post. reaming ourselves so all our members jump on. And then what happens is you have sneezers. I'll talk about that in a second. Number 11, I'm sad it's this way, but you need to advertise to tell the city who you are and what you're doing. Advertise to tell the city. And I'll be honest with you, right now we're not doing a good enough job with that Thursday night service. Everywhere I go in town, hey, I know who you are, Pastor Fletcher. I used to go to your church, but I work on Sundays. It wasn't, I used to go to church, but now I go to such and such. I work on Sundays. Oh, really? Do you know we have a Thursday night service? We do. This literally happened to me. Three times last week, this happened to me in this city. We do? Yes, we do. Thursday night. It's the same as Sunday. Oh, I have to check that out. Chink, there's your change. Away you go. We're not doing a very good job at that in some areas. You need to tell the people what's in your city, what's going on in your church. Number 12, major on the major holidays. And during the major holidays, you need to add services. I didn't know that before. And I'll tell you, I got a really profound lesson in that. So we had, I was going to the beach on Easter Monday. I was going to take the day off and do a solid 2 day, Monday and Tuesday, and just get with God. And Greg Surratt called me on the telephone. And he said, hey, I love hearing Easter stories. So tell me your Easter story. I told him how many people we had in attendance. how many services we had, how many salvations. So we talked about it a little bit. And so we're driving down the road, and I said, Greg, tell me yours. He told me his story. So I called Kendrick after this. I called Randy after this. I called somebody else. David, I may have called you after this. So he told me his story. And then I was driving down the road. It started bothering me, and I started thinking about the numbers. And I don't, wait. Seacoast, right? One of the most influential, largest churches in America. Seacoast. They had about 15,000 people at the time. So I actually literally pulled off the road. I was driving to the beach. I pulled off the road. And I got out my phone, and I started running the numbers. And I said, we had this many people, this many services. And I'll remember, we had 700 and something people per service. And Greg, they just killed us. I mean, we had 7,000 people, let's say. But Greg had like 23,000 people. And I said, man, one day, you know, we'll figure this out. But when he told me how many services, so I pulled off the road, and I did the math. He had fewer services. He had fewer people in services than we did. He had like 500-something people in their services. We had 700-something people in our services. Kendrick, I know you got to remember this. Because I called you and I said, Kendrick, how many services did you have? Two. How many people did you have? I forget what you told me. I said, next year, do four at Easter, and you'll whatever it was. And you tried it. And it worked, if it didn't lie. Pardon me? Eight last year. Awesome. How many folks do you have? Awesome. Congratulations. So this year we're doing, coming up, we're doing, so here's what we did. In order to communicate to the city, man is here, and we do things with quality, and so we get the crown on Easter. We did that, and we brought in some celebrities and stuff to kind of make a splash. But when you consolidate, you have fewer people. So here's a law. You want to multiply people, multiply groups. When you consolidate, you'll have fewer people. So if you have three services, now sometimes you have to do this because numbers dwindle and you have to make adjustments. You have three services and you say, for the summer, I want one giant service. So you drop to one. By the time the fall comes, you'll have fewer people than you had before. Normally, that's the way that works. So this year in the Easter, we're going to have 20, why am I looking at you? 25 services in all different, so it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, whatever. And the more services you have, the more people you have. Now, there's a point where there's the critical mass thing. So if you have a service in a room like this that holds, I don't know how many chairs are in here, but if we had that many people, we have that many people in this room and that's it, that ain't good. Those people are not coming back. They all better be committed. And they're even thinking, this is Easter? This is Easter's? Does he not know I've had diarrhea since Easter's? Nacho Libre. Do you remember when I ripped my blouse? So you got to watch the critical mass thing and you got to make judgments. But let me tell you something. Your committed people will come to those early services to make room. And if you have one or two that's too small, it won't kill you long term. But you need to find out where that comfort zone is and kind of camp just on the other side of it, okay? Then advertise. And when you advertise, tell people what is happening. Tell them when it's happening and tell them there's child care. So if you're going to have on the major holidays, if you're going to tell the city that you're going to do a candlelight. And let me tell you something about Christmas Eve. People love traditional Christmas Eve stuff. If you don't do a Christmas Eve service, start Christmas Eve and advertise. I'm just telling you, this is for free. Put whatever you do for your graphics, make it look traditional. We have actually called it traditional. Traditional Christmas Eve candlelight service. People turn out for that and great. They will invite their friends to that. So make it less than an hour. Preach the gospel. Give an altar call. Are you serious? Yes, preach the gospel. This is the time when Jesus came into the world. Tonight is your opportunity for him to come into your heart. I mean, it's that easy. Tell them what's going to happen. Tell the people in your audience, your attendants, your members, what's going to happen. When you advertise, tell the people on the outside what's going to happen, when it's going to happen. Tell them there's going to be child care. So add services, advertise, and announce. Tell the people ahead of time what to expect. Get them excited about the program you have so they'll tell somebody. And then preach a lead-up message. I talked about that before. Now, Christmas Eve, we won't do that because Christmas Eve, you heard what Alan said. Christmas Eve is the new Easter. Christmas Eve is a thing right now in the country. Millennials love it. It's traditional, especially if you make it traditional, if it's kind of dark and a little more dressy. And it may not be your style, but do it. Because they'll turn out for it, and people with families will come out for it, and lost people will come for it. It's a societal thing. It might as well be a Dickens reading, you know, somebody's reading Dickens, or it's a showing of some other kind of traditional movie or whatever the case may be, they'll come to it not because it's religious, but just because it's traditional. It gives you a chance to preach the gospel to them. And you don't have to preach a lead-up message to Christmas Eve. You probably do to Easter. And then number 13, I'm doing good on time because we're going to end early. Number 13, Alan stole this too. Do less, but do it better. If people think that they're bringing their friends, people want their friends to think well of them. So no one says, come with me. Hey, I found this really crappy restaurant. Let's go. Right? They don't do that. But if they find a good place, they'll meet you. So meet me at, or they'll take you. And then they're going to tell you everything about the restaurant that you're going to find out for yourself in the next 5 minutes. Am I telling the truth? They're going to go through the menu and tell you all the good stuff. They're going to tell you what's good about. They're going to tell you where the barbecue place came from and all that. They're going to tell you and say, I'm reading it right now and you're telling me. Why are you doing that? Because I found it and I want you to think well of me. When it's done, I want you to say, man, that was awesome. Because you got something about ourselves. So if you do too much, you won't do it well. I'm just telling you right now. If you got, and I'm prejudiced here. That's why we only do three things. Inspiring worship services, life-giving small groups, outreach, world-changing outreach. We don't do anything else but that. We ought to do a whole conference on how to be simple sometime. Those are the only three things we do. Let's do a men's event. No. Let's do a women's event. No. Let's do VBS. No. Let's do, name it. Just go ahead. Throw stuff out. Let's do a conference. No. This is Impact, not Manna. Let's do a big conference. Let's do a big women's conference. No. Men's conference. No. If you do them, fine. We do three things. We do small groups. Everyone's in one. As much as we can get them in there. That's how everything works. We do outreach. We do three things so we can do them well. We focus on those. We focus on doing well. If you do 40 things, you'll do all of them crappy. I'm just telling you the truth. The more stuff you try to do, listen, we have a lot of people, and we only do three things because we can only do three things well. So if you've got 500 people and you're doing 35 things, you can't do those things well. Now, here's the problem. Your own members don't want to bring their friends to something that's a crappy thing. They love you. They love the church. But they're not necessarily going to bring someone to it because they don't want to have to sit there and make excuses the whole time. You understand what I'm saying? Alan said that when he talked about excellence. So do less things, do fewer things, do less, and do it better. So I'm going to take 7 minutes. Are there any questions you have about increasing Sunday morning attendance? I don't think that's on.
It is.
What impact, if any, is on your schedule due to Christmas falling on a Sunday this year?
Yeah, that's easy. We're doing all our eggs in Christmas Eve. Is that right?
Yes. No Sunday morning service. Everything's Christmas Eve service.
There you go. See, I get confused about these things. I'll tell you why. Because we've already planned the 2017 calendar. So my brain is in 2017, so I have to make a shift to go back to 16. So that is right.
Yes. Someone else? Wayne? Yes?
Yes. Correct.
Okay, good. Yeah. So we'll cancel. I think we are keeping our Thursday night service, and then we're having a Christmas Eve service. And services, absolutely. Yeah, and we're going to pack it out all day. It's going to be a long, long day. Last year, we did 3, 5, and 7, and I wish we had done 4 more.
Next year, we're doing Christmas Eve is on Sunday.
Yep.
So we're doing services as normal. And
this
then we're
is a gift. This is a gift, children.
And then
this
we're
is
doing
a gift.
Well, I'll let you do it, but.
No, I'll tell you why. Because you get 2 shots at them. So now you got Sunday morning is your regular, it's Christmas Eve is on a Sunday. So Sunday morning is our regular Sunday service. We do Christmas Eve on Sunday night. You hear that? And we're going to differentiate the services. So it is this is what I'm talking about. You can't just plan it. You've got to tell them. You have to advertise it. Tell them. On this next week is a regular Sunday morning service. But we want you to come back. And these invitations are to bring people back to the Christmas Eve services that evening. So people think, wow, that is so kind of you to do that. So they go to church on Sunday. You get to hit them twice and bring their friends. So you got the guests from Sunday morning. You got the guests from Sunday night. Ow! Preach that gospel, baby. Don't preach the same message. Got to be two different messages. Got to be two different worship sets. So you do get a little, listen, you get a little pushback from, I got to do two different worship sets? Come on. It's the Super Bowl. Let's go. Right? Any questions? Can't see them. Anybody else? About attendance, increasing attendance. All right, I'll sum it up with this. These are the kinds of things that you don't do occasionally. These are the kinds of things that you work into your schedule, work into your process, so you do them all the time. So we average about 100 guest packets turned in every single week. There are 2.8 persons behind every door in Cumberland County. You can find that out easily by finding out how many households you have, how many domiciles you have, and then how many people live in your county divide. There are 2.8 persons behind every door. So we average about 280 people in on the weekend, every single weekend. We average 280 people that are first-time guests. And this is how we do it. Nothing else but this. It sounds a little boring, but you work all these pieces every single week and communicate, create an environment. The altar call is an important thing as well. You heard Alan talk about that. And create an environment where people want to bring their friends. They're proud to bring their friends to it, which means end on time, start on time, all those kinds of things. All right. God bless you guys. Thank you for coming to this. It was, I think it went okay. You all feel good about it? Don't assume we've decided to just do this next year. We plan in August, so I needed to put something on the calendar, at least as what we call here as a placeholder. So I'm interested in your feedback. Let's do it again. We can do any kind of topic. We can change it up. Whatever it is that is on your heart and mind. So excited about you guys. Love you. You are our band of brothers. So hang out as long as you want. Lunch is on your own. There's some water and popcorn over there if you're cheap. But anyway, God bless you guys. Good seeing you. God bless you.